Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of Ohio is open session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated, please. First case in our calendar, 98-26-16, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Stephen Wilson. Mr. Brewer.
Mr. Chief Justice and Justices, this case is presented to you as a very unusual case. The etiology of that combined throw off the building and hit the respondent's client in the head. Personal injury act pursued, and it was lost adversely, as the records in this case show. But the interesting thing is that this is not a case of negligence and cover-up. It's a case of where counsel was in effect certainly the representation of his client. And the way those matters were handled subsequent to that, the interesting thing in the case, and the issue which I think is the one that really requires focus, is whether or not an act of negligence by an attorney can in and of itself be difficult. Certainly there is negligence. And in the handling of the matter, there are factors which I think anyone, any layman would see in determining what this time is appropriate. As you will see, there's a lot of medical information presented in this case, which is without question. So within an 8-month period of time, both counsel's parents were debilitated seriously, required to have ongoing care, which required counsel in this case to go and attend to his parents. In addition to that, there was a long-term relationship that he was in that ended adversely. In addition to that, he had a sibling committed suicide all within 8 months. His handling of everything was probably clouded to some extent and reacted as one would react normally. The bar focuses in this matter on his failure to cooperate. There was some correspondence from the Bar Association to the respondent that was not responded to in a timely way, but he did talk to them, provide all the information, all of his file in this particular matter. We think that the matter before this court and before the panel is clear.
The fact is that those are all facts, and we've read those. We understand it. It seems to me in your conclusion, in your brief, you say that you think it should be a public reprimand. The board thought the relator, as I read it, says a public reprimand, but the board says 6 months all state. So we're not even talking about the factual predicate, are we? We're just talking about a penalty.
We are, except after that sanction, Your Honor, what the board did, I think they did two things, one of which was rather disingenuous. They asked for a monitor in this particular case. Essentially, the medical experts, it's not controverted, it's agreed to a trial, but that the therapy that my client was under was a fact. I mean, he was responding appropriately, he was self-diagnosed, his prognosis was good, and the ongoing treatment that he might need would be on an as-needed basis. The fact that he self-diagnosed, the therapist thought was very important. What the board did in their recommendation of sanction is they recommended 6 months and 6 months stay and a monitoring attorney. The attorney to monitor what? It's to monitor a medical condition that the medical people determined did not exist, and he had handled appropriately.
I understand your argument with regard to that. Now let's move on to what is your position on the restitution of the $8,000?
We're in a difficult position to argue that, but quite honestly, I do not think that the board from the Bar Association should be an election agency. That was not an issue that was raised in the initial complaint. There are lots of reasons. I did make a record why this promissory note, which is accumulating interest today, has not been paid yet, but everything is happening to do it. Part of the diagnosis in this case, part of the reason this attorney has been relatively will very satisfy the extent that the chairman of arbitration panel, but being the therapist, everyone is, you can slow down, you can back off, don't get into practice of law right away or quicker than you think, and get in the most effective environment. By doing that, he terminates really the ongoing practice, cash flow, and things like that. The payment of those money, there is a remedy. The remedy is available, it can be collected, because nothing as to an ethical issue should be, if it is addressed, I would suggest, in a form other than this one.
Well, you don't dispute that it's due, do you?
No.
Then why should we put the client through another court proceeding to enforce what we all agree is due?
Your Honor, I cannot, and I am not going to blame the client for any of these matters. If he can't collect, he will collect, and it's attached 22 in terms of the issues which are merely, I think, presented to this court, is what the conduct. Payment of a claim was not any of the conduct alleged. Was not part of this complaint. Now, subsequently, I'm requested to argue the defendant explain. It's all in that record. Was not part of the claim that was raised originally. And there's no satisfactory answer.
But
to the court at this point.
Mr. Verlo, yes. The reason that we consider such things is in the nature of mitigating and aggravating factors in terms of sanction, right? As you know. And so it. In terms of considering the harm to the client as a aggravator or a mitigator to the sanction, then we say harm to the client, and then we figure in what restitution will be. So it isn't part of the conduct. You're correct, but it certainly is a factor in the ABA sanctions and the guidelines that
sure.
The.
Okay. And I would certainly think if there were a term of probation that was imposed with a sanction 1 year. There's a condition prior to reinstatement that there be evidence that the client has been made whole. I think that would take care of the restitution issue. But for monitoring, again, it's monitor what?
I know. I don't disagree with you about the monitor, but Justice Douglas asked you about the restitution, and it seems that your client is working. I mean, we know from the mitigation evidence that your client only works 4 hours at a non-legal job, so he's probably not making much money. $8,000 repayment of $8,000 prior to the 6 months. I mean, this is conditioned on. The stay is conditioned on repayment of the client. He's not. Is he in a position to borrow or to make that happen for the client so that he warrants a stay?
Certainly, I think that he's in a position where that it's reasonable mm-hmm. for this court to say, look, there's a financial obligation to this person, and condition under probation for a period of time that might be. This must be paid. And then that could preferred where it should be, lawfully, which would be on my client. I do agree and understand that.
Mr. Brillo?
Yes.
I'm sorry, were you finished with your answer to this?
Yes, I was.
I guess I don't understand. We very seldom see a respondent's counsel or respondent say they don't want to be monitored. I guess I don't understand what your objection is to monitoring. He lied to a client about why a case was lost. He then got a settlement which he didn't report to a client. He said mental illness, and the recommendation is that he continue to be allowed to practice law. But it seems to me something more has to happen than that. I mean, we order monitoring. I mean, as you know, it's fairly common for us to order that. But what is the problem with monitoring here?
I believe a monitoring has been monitored for attorneys. I think there are specific things which you can do to measure and address. I think the monitoring suggested by the board was for a non-existent mental illness or is discouraging the self-diagnosis and treatment that the client got. I asked myself a question when I read the report. What's this monitor to do and measure? And when we file our quarterly reports as a monitor, what is it that he can do? Mr. Wilson can practice law today, but he is not because it just doesn't feel like it's appropriate to fill this matter is finally resolved. And put the law through a position, really, I would think of saying nothing bad had happened. I don't know what he could do other than to pay the fine. I do not look at this, this sanction, Your Honor, as a liability for what we're requesting. I mean, if discipline, and public discipline on this one, is, I think, a significant service. The rule for unbound by the rules of case, as you well know, I did not try the initial hearing, but the allegation of lying and being dishonest is to me a real stretch, because no one suggests, not even related, that Mr. Wilson did not tell his client that his case was lost.
Right, he gave different reasons.
Voluntarily. So he did, in fact, do that. But what permeates this matter to me is what do you do to be successful? How do we ensure that you are not a danger to the legal community at large, to citizens at large, which I know is a big area of concern, not the most important area of concerns of this court. And there are all kinds of indicators which we all agree is self-diagnosing, self-treating, is voluntary withdrawal, recognizing that at this period of time, I should not be handling all the other people's and clients' affairs that a lawyer is normally entrusted to handle. But it's difficult in going through this list of numerous cases that you all see if this person lied to his client or lied to a court or to the bar. He did not handle it well, but he was going to face the pressures we would all understand, certainly on these facts. I do not think that on the range of conduct, if he tried this case and lost it, I do not think he'd been there. If he perfected it as well as it could be perfected, if he lost it, he would not be here. His problem was and is, and even dealing with the Bar Association, just the enormous depression and major pressure, which I think he is sure that he has gone through. After the payment, there's been a fine. I understand.
Mr. Berglow, to go back to that for a moment, to be fair to you and your client and your argument, the board did not suggest that the $8,000 be part of the sentence. I was curious about that, if you know why, because the panel made it very clear that they thought a public reprimand and $8,000 restitution plus the monitor. The board said we adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law of the panel and recommend, however, 6 months stayed, and never mentioned the $8,000, at least in our report. Is there some reason for that?
I do not know the reason. I know that relator in this matter rightfully is trying to pursue and make whole a person who believes stronger than they feel has been hurt by facts in the way. And they want to do that. Part of their previous support and the panel and arguments all along was that that money be remade to them. I cannot be upset with their pursuits. And I think the Bar Association pursuing this matter really had got the facts in a very simple fashion, which is what I prefer, before this panel.
But you don't know why there's the discrepancy between the panel's recommendation and the board's ultimate recommendation to us.
No, I would not predict that. I could guess, but Your Honor could guess as well as I do not know.
Well, I don't want to guess, and that's the problem, because it seems clear that there's a judgment, and signed a note at least, for the $8,000, and the board just doesn't even talk about it. And I just wondered if there was some factor that we're not being told that we ought to know about, but I would assume there is not.
No, I know of no other factors. Judge Kraft, in the court of common pleas, close to lawyers in criminal cases, I love this, is that I look to you lawyers to assist me in presenting the final fact to this jury. I do think that in this case, that the entire body of facts, ugly parts, good parts, that responded to later and got that in an undiluted fashion to the panel. Mine is simply on, if there is going to be a sanction, looking at the conduct, which we all agree, I think it's that this lawyer mishandled the case, one case, during a period of time of enormous difficulty. Given all those things, I think that he did respond in a way that we would want lawyers to respond to if they create a
I don't. I don't mean to be obsessed with the $8,000, but it bothers me, and that's why I continue to press you on it. Would he be able, over a period of time, to make payment, this restitution, that the client obviously has coming?
Yes, he would.
Would, supposing any sanction was conditioned upon regular payments?
That is certainly appropriate, I think, Your Honor. And I would go only this far to say, the fourth report testimony, he had two other appearances, major medical problems, it's just a financial drain that, as well as treatment that you go through.
So you're saying it couldn't be a lump sum payment at the moment?
Not immediately. But I understand that if someone has to suffer, there's an obligation in a situation like this that have to follow a lawyer, not the client. I do understand that, so that's my point.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your
Honor.
The issue in this case is easy. That is, the penalty too harsh. Cases that this court has heard on single acts of neglect all include generally a public reprimand. In this case, the panel went higher and added in the 6-month suspended sanction and the monitoring. I think this court will then have to review the record to see if there's anything that causes that sanction to be increased. But I think the record is clear in that regard that there is an act here of failure to disclose a settlement offer. There is lying. The panel, despite the testimony of Mr. Wilson, found that Mr. Wilson had not told his client about a settlement that he could accept it. But the thread that runs through all of these cases, no matter what the level of wrongdoing is, it's two things: remorse. I don't think there's really any remorse in this record. And secondly, no harm to the client. We run through all the cases, the ones we cited in our brief for the relator, either mentioned that one where there's a $10,000 sum that was paid or almost wouldn't pay, or in one case where the lawyer had an exemplary 30-year reputation, there was no harm to the client. In this case, I've made this argument several times in the two sessions we had. Mr. McGaddy is a man, the record will reveal, in his upper 70s. This wrong took place in March 1996 when he advised Mr. McGaddy that his cause was lost. He murky as to whether or not he could have saved that cause. But in any regard,
if he'd given the right reason, I guess there could have been possibly a 60B motion, I would think.
I think it was a good argument for excusable neglect here. The 60B motion could have gotten around what happened. I think I can argue that the trial test let this whole thing go through, put on an entry, and make no real effort to get Mr. Wilson to come in and say, why weren't you here? Mine was the trial test. I said I would have told that entry and said, let's have Mr. Wilson to come up here. If they don't call Mr. Wilson, get him in here. We'll find out why he wasn't here. I would let this thing just sink completely on one side's arguments. But nonetheless, it happened. He told his client there was nothing he could do. But the point is that he was sued, Mr. Wilson, in September of 96 for this sum. In April, in a settlement, not civil judgment, but a settlement, Wilson signed a note for $7,500 to settle this matter. It's an exhibit in the record. Today it's still not paid. And that's the threat. Those two things run through all of your decisions at this point. It's remorse and the client is made whole. I don't care if it's a single act of neglect. And Mr. McGaddy, who I write about this too periodically and tell me what's going on, it's important to him. And we still don't have that resolution.
What's that? Some confusion over whether you have the restitution before. Is that in your recommendation? Conditions that are included
not, however, in our, I don't think it's in our brief, it's certainly not in any of the complaint we originally filed, but the note is in the record. That was before the panel. The panel was all about what was the first panel. You know, there are two panels in this matter. But the first panel heard all that and accepted those exhibits. And then the second panel, who read that record and reached its conclusion on the merits, had that note.
I was in error about that. The board did say restitution. Mm-hmm. The board did say restitution with panel. But there seems to be some other discrepancies, and I want to get to the exact amount. You say he signed a note for $7,500.
Yes, sir. I've got the exhibit.
That's in the record. Right.
Exhibit number 33 in the record.
Stipulation number 10 says Mr. McAtee hired an attorney who sued a respondent for legal malpractice. During the litigation, respondent agreed to pay McAtee $8,000 and signed a promissory note to that effect. Is that an error in our report?
That's probably an error.
Okay.
The note that I looked at again last night, it is $7,500.
Our report also says, relator recommends a public reprimand for the violations. Your conclusion says, where respondent has failed to establish a baseline of acceptable office and business practice to which he can return, which will ensure his appropriate handling of future client matters, a public reprimand is not an adequate remedy.
Well,
Are you ready to stand today and tell us that a public reprimand is what you're asking for,
no,
notwithstanding what's in your brief?
No. I want to change my mind. I feel badly in saying that because what I should have said is public reprimand, but they can give restitution to his client.
You say that.
That's what I should have said.
You do.
Initially, when I made the recommendation to panel number one, public reprimand, because the case involves support public reprimand, but they can give restitution.
So if we ordered restitution, your recommendation would be public reprimand, because you do say that, to include the appointment of a monitoring attorney and an order of restitution.
When I made that point to the panel, we had already covered the cases that had single occurrences of negligence, and we found that the common thread was public reprimand. I think what the panel did, number two, did was simply look at some of these other issues that they found. The one that I find they didn't say he was lying, but in fact, if you look at the findings of fact, they say lying. He didn't tell us about the settlement. But the other issue is the fair and next restitution. I'm adding the absence of remorse because I read the record, and I don't see necessarily that issue here. And I think the best way to indicate remorse is to make your client whole, especially when you get 4 years to do it.
Mr. Bailey, the major point that Mr. Berluth's raised is the necessity of monitoring. Cincinnati Bar Association, I assume, would be the monitor in this case, that correct?
That would be.
What sort of monitoring plan? How would you see the monitoring occurring here with Mr. Wilson's plan?
We have always, and I can say we because I was chairman of our certified committee for 3 years, we've always had a trouble, not that we shouldn't do it, but in finding somebody to do it, to do the monitoring. And I don't know that we've gotten past trying to think of when this decision came up, who we're going to get to actually do this.
Well, and I'm not thinking about who. Mr. Berluth does it sometimes, you know, but I'm not concerned about who. How would he says monitoring is not appropriate here? There's nothing to monitor. What would the Cincinnati Bar Association monitor here? What kind of why do you see a need for monitoring? I guess that's the issue that he's raised, and I'd like your answer.
I don't know that he asked for monitoring, but I could see maybe a 30-day intervals, having him come in, and just the lawyer will monitor, talk with him, ask him about what he's doing, and just get an idea of his activity as far as practicing law, and ask him about the state of his health.
Would the monitor, do you see the monitor assisting in his ability to pay the restitution, make the restitution?
I don't think the monitor could ask her that. I don't believe the monitor could. Well, I don't know what would happen. We stand in the 30 days, suspension is suspended, find out he still has to pay. I suppose he offers the argument, look, I can't pay. I really don't have enough income to do this. I can't borrow. I have no grandmother who lend me the money. Just out of business, I can't do it. I don't know what we do then. Can't do what I'm trying to argue. But at least the monitor could at least every 30 days inquire into these matters rather than just let the time roll by with no further attention to it. There would be an asset if a lawyer learned that there was an asset of hands and form, felt it was a medical issue, he could raise that.
That's, I guess, Mr. Berlew's point. How does a layperson offer an opinion on medical issues? I mean, the panel suggests that there's stressors, and his stressors is the word they use in terms of his practice. And, you know, I'm kind of persuaded by the argument that any of us as lawyers are we somehow trained to deal with stressors or assess stressors?
We may not, but based on this record, I think
we're talking about a big brother or something.
Yeah, I think a kind of big brother or a monitoring lawyer could, in questions, he'll try to develop this area.
Mm-hmm.
And if he saw something, what perplexed me is that if he saw something, how does he, whose attention does he bring it to? Does he bring it to the court? File motions, and if we think he needs medical attention, we think we need another medical examination, that might be an issue.
Usually we assign monitoring attorneys to monitor things that lawyers have expertise in, office management practices, those sort of things. So we haven't had a practice to assign people to look over someone's mental health or essentially that's what we're talking about here.
We did have a case prepared with a lawyer that's a drug and alcohol problem. We had a monitoring lawyer monitor his
measures.
Also, there's also an issue about him having examinations medically.
Yeah, and if that were
continuing problem, that's included in the monitoring order.
Well, I guess I thought the monitor here would not monitor certainly his mental health, monitor the effects of a deficiency in mental health. If he had another problem like he had here, that perhaps the monitor could catch the effects of that. He had to be fairly vigilant to know that he had a settlement that he didn't offer, that he didn't pass on to a client, or that he missed a date.
That was the reason I suggested the 30-day intervals. Some of these monitoring sessions that we get usually are 90-day intervals. The 30-day intervals, with some attention to it and questioning, could be the subject of protecting the public. And I think that's all the panel, that's all this is all about, is protecting the public. And I think the panel had that in mind.
Yeah.
If they just had a lingering doubt without any current expert that they had before them, not the respondent's expert, but their own expert, to tell them what his present status was. Another question, then that's all I have to
say. Thank you, Mr. Bailey.
Thank you.
Mr. Berlew, use your time if you may take 30 seconds.
Now, there's the only thing I want to point out, I know we're not bushwhacked in this case, but procedurally, we stipulated the first hearing, which included the respondent's recommendations, which is why it's difficult for us to deal with an issue in hindsight. That's the monitoring. Your honors are absolutely correct. We have to report to the Bar Association report quarterly, going through the activities that we have done as a monitor, addressing the conduct which requires the monitor to be appointed. And it really is. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.